I want to know about what happened to Roy of the famous Siegfried and Roy. It was not actually Roy. It was a cousin, and he got mauled because the animals didn't know him. Is that true?
Yeah. The real Roy died of cancer, and instead of bringing the act to a close, which was such a big act here and brought so many hundreds of thousands of people and would have put so many people out of work, what they did was they found a cousin of Roy's, gave him a facelift, and gave him training with the animals and substituted him without the public knowing. And he did okay until that point where he was unable to deal with a situation and he got mauled. And of course, that was the end of the act. But I think between the time that the real Roy died and the fake Roy got mauled was a couple of years, at least a couple of years. So they did keep the act going and made a lot of people a lot of money.
So that's a true story. That really happened.
Absolutely.
Roy's gone. He's been gone.
Absolutely.
Well, what I want to know is, how is it Wayne Newton looks the same year after year? I mean, that's just unbelievable. And Manilow, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, there are a bunch of people who want to talk to you. Do you want to talk to them?
Sounds good.
All right, well, let's bring on Michael. He's in North Carolina on Wild One. Michael, come on board the bridge.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Fine, thank you.
I had a quick question to take the answer off the air for Captain Lear. Wondering if he knew anything about a large celestial body possibly causing rapid ocean levels to rise globally, and if not the force of a celestial body, then some other solar force or galaxy force that could cause that. Thank you.
I don't know anything about it. I hear a lot about this Planet Nibiru and Planet X, and if they are true, if they do exist, they're not going to cause us any problems, so not to worry.
Bring John, I got a question for you.
Anyway.
Sorry, let's say that again.
Bring your tomato plants in anyway.
Yeah, right. Let me ask you something. Do you have anything to allow regarding these chemtrails? Because
I have not been a buyer of the chemtrail things. Having been a pilot for so many years and noticing all those things, there do seem to be a lot of contrails up there, but whether they're chemtrails or not, I don't know. But I do have friends that say they can smell the stuff coming down. So I have to say I do not know.
Well, I don't like to ask a man questions I don't mind asking you, because if you don't know, you'll just say so instead of trying to, you know, bluff your way through it, and I appreciate that. But,
right.
But let me ask you a question. If two aircraft are at, first of all, at what altitude and temperature? Because it gets colder as you get higher, we know that.
Right.
At what altitude does a contrail occur?
It would depend on the water content of the air. If it was, you know, as low as 28,000 feet, it could start there. If it's as high as 35,000 feet, it would start there. It it's different every day.
Well, now, can you have one at 12,000, or is that too low?
That's too low.
It is too low. So you need a minimum of what altitude to get one?
Let's see. You need a minimum of 25 to 30,000 feet.
Okay. All right. Now, is it possible? Let's just say that we're looking at two planes. They're flying along there, and let's say they've got about the same amount of juice pushed forward with their throttles.
Well, oh, let's say one produced and one not produced?
Well, let's say both aircraft, let's say they're each of the aircraft, let's say they're 737s or something. And so they got, each have two engines, and they're both at the same power settings and so forth, and they're both at the same altitude. Is it possible for one to produce a contrail and the other not to?
No.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. Well, that settles that. Chemtrails are real. I knew it. All right, then. Let's talk to Peter in Massachusetts. He's in Cambridge, Massachusetts, a venerable town, I think, on Wild 2. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Talk to us, brother.
Okay, John, thank you for this precious information. I have two questions. What's the story with the Iranian-Israeli threat of war? Is it some kind of con game? And the second question is, about 3 months ago, someone called in and said Dr. Peter Beter, who has passed on but has a website. I was the assistant of Jimmy Carter, and you revealed that Jimmy Carter surrendered to Russia, surrendered sorry of the United States to Russia because Russia was taking out our defense systems with plasma weapons. So that's my two questions.
Do you hear anything about that, John? Russia took out our weapons.
John, I think he said the first one, was it a question about Iran?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, if you think it's going to happen, if you think there's going to be a conflict with them.
I don't know. I'm not a very good prophet. And,
okay. All right, and the other thing was, did directed energy weapons or particle weapons of some sort take out our defenses, and we've surrendered our sovereignty to the former Soviet Union, otherwise known as Russia?
No.
I didn't hear that one.
No, I doubt that would happen.
Okay, good. Well, Peter, don't worry about it. It appears that my money's on doing something with Iran. Either that or this is one great big bluff, and we're looking over there when actually something's going to happen over...
Yeah, what people don't understand is this whole Cold War was a fake. We were always friends with the Russians. We traded space duties. They'd go to Venus. We'd go to the moon. And we traded off. But we were never enemies with the Russians. We, after World War II, we allied with them because there were bigger problems with, or supposed problems with aliens and other things that they had to deal with. So... what they did was they faked this Cold War so that we could keep people's attention on a war between Russia and the United States and not have them find out about what was really going on.
So you mean I went through all those stupid duck and cover drills for nothing?
For nothing. It was all a fake.
Well, we financed the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution,
yeah.
And all their stuff looks like our stuff.
Yep.
In fact, that Delphin jet I was telling you about earlier, that L-29, that's all our stuff. I mean, it all looks like our stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Some of the nuts and bolts on it are English standard. You don't even have to use metric. No, never mind. It's ridiculous. All right, let's move along here. Roland in Central Nevada on Wild 3. Come upon the bridge and speak with us.
John B. Wells, you are awesome. I love Saturday nights. I wait for it to come every time so I can hear your topics and your voice and all that you do. So we love you out here, and your guest tonight is remarkable. And I have this question. I live near Urington. Do you know where that is? It's near
Absolutely.
Hawthorne.
Yeah, I used to fly for Baron Hilton, and we used to go into the Flying M Ranch just a little south of there.
I was driving down 95 down, you know, back and forth through from Urington to Vegas, you know, through Hawthorne there. I was with a friend of mine, and we saw some strange vehicles carrying strange cargo, and they weren't marked or anything. And I was trying to give him my theory, and he was telling me they were these coffins for FEMA death camps. Do you know anything about that?
No, I've heard that rumor for years now, and I don't believe it, but there are people that do.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of them. You know, I was passing by a rail yard the other day, and I've mentioned this before, but every time I see this thing, it freaks me out, and I took a picture of it. And it just says that, warning, remote control locomotives in use, cabs may be unoccupied, which is sort of chilling. It's like, here, we will load you up into the strange-looking personnel transporting boxcar things, and you won't be able to do anything about it because guess what? There is no engineer. There's nobody in the caboose. You're on your own, and we're controlling the train by satellite. I mean, that's pretty freaky stuff. I don't like it, but I suppose it's possible.
As long as you live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, you got nothing to worry about.
John, I'm not tweaking you here, but a minute ago you said the Russians, we were trading off space duties with them. They'd go to Venus, we'd go to the moon, but we didn't go to the moon. So does that mean they didn't go to Venus either?
Well, we faked going to the moon. Well, we did go to Venus, or the spacecraft did. Humans didn't go, but the information we got is baloney. They said that the surface temperature is 800 degrees C, which would make it impossible for the parachute, they said, landed the craft there. But no, Venus is a nice place to live. There's hundreds of millions of people there, just the same on every single planet, and every single moon in our solar system. People are there. Where NASA tells us there's four gas giants in our solar system, when in fact there's only one gas giant, and that's NASA itself.
Right. Right. And the only, well, yeah. And then I suppose the gas god would be the government that controls it. All right, Andrew in L.A. on Wild 5, would you be there?
Yeah, great show, John. Great show.
Oh, thanks.
Mr. Lehrer, it's a real honor. Bill Lehrer was your dad, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, your dad was a brilliant, brilliant man. I had been following his inventions for some time, you know, the Learjet and many others. And, you know, what an honor to speak to you, and what a privilege to be born of a man of that stature. I'd like to know if you have ever heard about the U.S. underwater sub bases, which I had met a gentleman who pulled up in a limo many years ago, a gentleman about 90 years old, and this was 20 years ago, and had a chauffeur, and he told me his son had a software company that was making the software for U.S. sub underwater bases. And I wonder if you had heard that. And secondly, have you ever heard any info about the broadcast out of Russia within the last 12 months about the prediction from Russia or Russian officials that China within 10 years was going to invade America?
No, I hadn't heard that China is going to invade America. I don't know whether that's going to happen. As far as the underground or underwater submarine bases, it sounds plausible. I see no reason why there couldn't be.
Okay.
As far
All right,
as,
thanks.
But I don't have any information on it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate you. Say, John, did your dad invent the 8-track tape player?
Right. Remember Madman Muntz, if you're that old. He had the 4-track tape player, and what would happen is that it wasn't continuous loop, and you'd have to, when it got to the end, then you'd have to rewind it and play it again. And what my dad did is take that 4-track and made it 8 tracks and made it a Mavis loop. And so that it would just play on and on and on. And he formed a different company and in Detroit, and their first order was from Ford Motor Company, I believe, in 1965. And they were the first ones to have the Lear 8-track stereo in their cars.
Now, did he also invent, I heard somebody say he invented the ADF, the automatic direction finder for aircraft.
He improved it, and made it smaller. Same thing with the autopilot. He improved it and made it smaller, but he didn't actually invent the first one.
Well, what other things did he invent that we might not know about?
Well, you know, he's always credited with invented the car radio, but that's not true. What he did is he invented the B battery eliminator, which allowed a radio to be played in a car without the ignition static. And that's the one that, that's the patent he sold to, the idea he sold to Motorola. And that's got him started, Lear Incorporated, in 1930. And that company ran for until 1960, when he sold it to Siegler, and it became Lear Siegler. And he took the money from that and started Lear Jet Corporation.
You know, not to get personal here, and I don't want to be intrusive. Sorry, I had to hit the cough switch there, but was it difficult growing up around a visionary dad like that? Because I mean, you've gone on to be a roaring success, but a lot of times sons who grow up with illustrious fathers, you know, they get tormented and troubled, and they don't do as well as their dads do. But while you might not be an inventor, you certainly did many other things that certainly qualify as you know, right up there at the top of the fulfillment chain.
Yeah, he was a real pain, and I never got along with him, and he left me of his fortune $1, which incidentally I never got. But I'll tell you a story that would typify. In 1960, No, it was 1971. I was flying for Clay Lacy Charter, and it was in the. I landed at Wichita, and I'd always go over to Learjet to fuel because he gave me a break on the fuel. And I walked in, and he had all his engineers around, and they were having their usual evening drinking and BS section where they talk about what happened during the day and everything. And there was a guy there, an engineer, an old engineer named Gordon Israel. And what they were talking about was adding a speed brake to the Learjet. And it already had spoilers on the top of the wing, but he was proposing a speed brake. And I was standing in the doorway, and I said, you know, Gordon, that's a lot of BS. And out of the corner, the only thing I remember is I saw movement out of the corner of the eye, of my eye, and then I woke up about 5 minutes later, and what he had done was knocked me unconscious. And I woke up, and my dad's private cop there, Buzz Nanny, said, you okay, John? I said, yeah, I got to get to the airplane. I got to go. And later I heard from one of the engineers who was sitting at the table that after it happened, my dad said, God, I wish I had the guts to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. I'll tell you, everybody's got a story. They really do. Alan, east of the Rockies in Hartford, Connecticut, are you there?
Hello, gentlemen. Great show tonight.
How you doing? Thanks.
I'd like to back up Mr. Lear a little bit on his directed energy weapons comment. And just a little specific outline, and I'll try to make it quick. And that is that Building 6, Mr. Lear may know already where I'm going with this. On Dr. Wood's site, and also on Eric Hufschmid's book on this subject matter, there are clear photographs available in the public sector that were taken the day after 9/11, after the clouds had dissipated. They're taken from a satellite, top down, beautiful sunny day, and they captured the damage that was done. Building 6 lies at the foot of the two then non-existent twin towers. It was gutted on the inside of it, but the perimeter of the wall structure was left intact, perhaps about 20 foot thick of walls all the way around. Now, the dead giveaway that some kind of a space-based weapon was used for me is that along the perimeter of the interior of this building is a scalloped effect of perfect outline of circles.
Yeah,
you don't have the circles in the interior because apparently the weapon was used in an overlapping way, like a cookie cutter, one cut over the next. So there's nothing left in the interior of this building from the flat roof right down to the cellar. It's gone. The official story is that junk fell off of the towers and knocked down the interior. That's baloney. It's too even of a cut. There's even photographs of the interior of Building 6 that show a perfect, approximately 30-foot diameter circular cut right from the top of the roof straight down to the basement, and it betrays itself as a circle like the edge of a giant cookie cutter.
Yeah.
All along the perimeter of that building. On the inside.
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow. Tell you what, John, let's amplify that when we come back. I'll tell you what, this has been going awfully fast tonight. We'll be back with more John Lear and some more of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we're going to be joined by Dr. Joseph Resnick, who works with John Lear on a thing called the Pegasus Project. 2 minutes, please. Coast to Coast AM will continue. Well, please welcome onto the bridge, along with myself and John Lear, Dr. Joseph Resnick, who works with John on the Pegasus Project. Dr. Resnick, you've been a guest on the program before, yes?
Yes. Hey, good evening. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, John, what's going on?
Hey, you don't even know. You don't want to know. Hey, you know, I missed you at a seminar out in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. You were 10 or 12 minutes ahead of me, and I wanted to shake your hand, say thank you to you. You know, you have me posted up under dark secret. secrets on the on your page.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you finally in person.
Great to talk to you.
So do you fellas work together or what?
Well, sort of, yes of, no of, in a roundabout way.
Well, tell the audience what you do in case they don't know who you are.
Well, John has written some things and posted some information about me, about moon mining.
Ah.
So.
What about moon mining?
Wait a minute. John, I sent you an email a few minutes ago to John Lear at your email.
Okay, let me check.
Yeah. Well, that photo up there, those bubbles, guess what that is?
Which bubbles where?
Up on Coast to Coast email or Coast to Coast site tonight, you have those pictures of moon anomaly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, guess what that is? That's a wellhead.
The one at Aristarchus?
Yeah, that's a wellhead.
A wellhead. Guess,
we're getting up there, John. H3.
Oh, yeah, the...
H3.
Helium-3, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to give you, okay, it's 4:40 a.m. Eastern Time. Okay, 10 minutes, no holds barred. I have an agreement in stone that I can talk about stuff. Okay, I'll give you 10 minutes. Ask me anything. Ask me anything that you want to know about the moon, moon mining, H3, who's involved. Okay, you got, it's 4:41 a.m. Okay, go. Now.
Okay, you have the rights to 90% of the moon minerals?
Well, here's how that happened, John. When I was a young man, I was involved with developing the speech technologies and next generation stuff for the military. It came to my attention that they brought this, they brought this stuff, the moon mining stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it was new back then. It was new. Well, I'm going back 30 years now, John. I'm going back 30 years when I was a kid. So, you know, I'm the little guy sitting in the corner. I've got all these egghead PhDs, talking about this stuff. And I said, well, what if we do this? Shut up, kid. I said, well, what if we shut up? Well, guess what? The kid didn't shut up. The kid went forward. I said, well, how about if we do it this way? So I went and did it that way. Those guys have walked off the planet since then.
Okay, so who is the wellhead on Aristarchus? That's to mine helium-3.
See those bubbles?
I could look for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's on Coast to Coast. Okay, if you go on Coast to Coast AM right now, and you pull that up, and
it's about the third picture from the top, and there's several of them at the upper left. Yeah, those are what?
Yeah, look at these bubbles.
What are those bubbles?
Yeah, guess who the guy is that does bubbles? Me.
That's cool.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Be cool. Extremely.
Listen,
cool.
You guys, hold on a minute. You guys may understand each other, but there are several million people out there that may not. So what are you talking about?
Oh, the bubbles. You mean the perfect spheres that I have labeled as perfect spheres?
Yes.
Yeah, guess when that's we made the first... quote unquote perfect spheres. Nothing's perfect, but
okay.
The first spheres that we made in space were aboard STS-41 and STS-43.
Okay.
We made spheres. We made microspheres, and those microspheres are still today the only and first standard to calibrate. Guess what? Hubble. You want to calibrate Hubble? Come to me. I give you the spheres to calibrate Hubble.
Okay, now you know that there's two Hubbles, right?
There's more than two.
That's take great.
One board.
Well, every time I think I got a story, somebody's got a better story.
I told you, okay, the clock down is now 43.
Yeah.
So I give you, 10 minutes.
Okay, Were you the one in the lab that had the reptilian working with you?
As a matter of fact, he had nictitating eye lenses, and he was down in Florida. Yeah, I am he.
Yeah, that's the story. And his and the way you could tell was that he'd close his inner eyelid every once in a while.
Well, he had glasses on, and then he pulled his glasses on, and he pulled his glasses off. I said to him, John, I said, hey, why are you wearing those glasses? He said, well, where I'm from, it's pretty bright. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it's pretty bright where I'm at. So they had three suns where he comes from.
Yeah.
Pleiades, undoubtedly, John.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. They had three suns there. So this guy was, he was absolutely looked like a human being. Full bird colonel, by the way. Full bird.
Yeah.
Full bird colonel. I said, what the hell's the matter with your eyes? Pardon me. So, well, it's pretty bright where I come from. Then the next day I show up there, down in Florida, on the West Coast there. They told me, Dr. Resnick, you don't have access. Your access is denied now. I said, well, I have a meeting with, Colonel so-and-so. Well, access denied. I said, well, where is he? Not here. So, hey, John.
Okay, just want to confirm that story. That's good. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate, you're keeping in touch with me and following me through the years and stuff. What do you want to know about moon mining?
I want to know if we're doing it.
Duh.
Are we mining helium-3 on the moon? If so, how do we get it back and forth?
I have been trying for the last 7 years to put together the team to do that. And there's...
But we haven't done it yet?
Well, I'm not going to say that. Even though I give you unrestricted, and it's 4:46, I've got 4 minutes left, 5 minutes. Now here, there is a young man who lives in Liechtenstein, and he is very, very wealthy and funds all of these projects. He funds these projects. Young guy. Just go into a store in any of the portals that you go into and buy some, Cobell candies or Swiss chocolates. The kid owns everything. He owns everything. Young kid. Young guy. Well, he's in his 30s now. First time I met him, he was 17. He's in his 30s now. But they fund everything from Liechtenstein.
Okay, and so why is he important to us?
I'm sorry?
Why is he important to us?
They fund everything.
Oh, okay, I see. Now, have you been to the moon yourself?
Money. It's the money.
Yeah, the money. Have you been to the moon yourself?
The trail. John should know this, as he was cut out of his inheritance. Just follow the money.
Yeah.
See who's putting up the money.
Okay, now, have you, Joe, have you been to the moon yourself?
John, I have not. I direct everything from a little place out here in the woods, and I have people that work for me, and I do things, and I travel, and still do stuff for PEO. And
okay, now, do you know somebody who has been to the moon?
I do.
Okay, and I'm not talking about the Apollo astronauts, but somebody else.
I do.
Okay, good. Well, I don't know what to do with my...
I can't tell you his name, but I can tell you that I have sponsored that individual to be part of the first Mars mission, and he has been approved. He's a good guy.
Okay.
He's a really good kid. I have been with him and mentored him for the last 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Many are picked, few are chosen. He's a good guy, good kid.
Okay, Joe, my...
No, it's a one-way trip up there, don't you, John?
No? What's
it's
the
one
deal?
One-way.
That's what I heard, but...
No, it is. It's one-way. We can get you there, but we can't get you off because of the atmosphere. The atmosphere is absolutely volatile up there. Despite what NASA,
we can get somebody there, but we can't bring them back, huh?
It's one way, John.
Can't we get the guys there to help us?
Pardon me?
Can't we get the people who live there on the moon to help us?
The people, the entities on the moon are not people.
Okay.
They're not people. They're not like us.
Okay. What areas of the moon do you know most about? Where all this stuff goes on? The landing, for instance.
Oh, we have multiple sites.
Okay, tell me one.
There's a place on the backside of the moon.
What's the name of it?
It's about 70. Well, it doesn't have a name yet.
No.
We haven't given it a name. It's about 70 miles high. That's the takeoff and landing port.
Huh.
It's seven on the back side of the moon. If you look at the front side of the moon, you see all these deviations and.
I'm very familiar with both sides. Just tell me about where it is on the far side.
John, I can't tell you that, but I can tell you. If you've been watching, postings lately, well, it's 4:50. I got 2 minutes. Some kid took a picture. Then it was posted on the internet. This little girl took a picture real close to those coordinates. Real close to those coordinates.
Okay.
Close. It was she couldn't get back behind the 32nd degree. She could only go to. You know what? We're working with Google Space right now on our Orion project and MI projects to bring this technology forward.
Yeah.
It's a really good, it's good technology. John, you should call me, connect with me. I'll give you this stuff.
Okay. Let's get together.
All right. That's Dr. Joseph Resnick.
I've got 1 minute. I have to get off. It's 4:51. I have to get off. John, I've been watching you for many years. I'm a friend of yours, supporter of yours, and I think you simply rock. and I appreciate Coast to Coast and George Norrie and Art Bell, and it was a pleasure to have spoken with all of you folks and to all the listeners out there. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there that people should know about, and they pay guys like me that they keep, down in a dungeon and throw me a bone every once in a while.
Yeah.
So I come out of the woodwork. This happens to be one of the nights I'm out of the woodwork.
Well, thank you for the information, Joe, and send me an email.
I shall, John.
Okay.
All right. Okay, it's 4:52. I got to go. Okay.
All right, over and out. Thanks for joining us. That was Dr. Joseph Resnick. Hey, John Lear. So tell us.
He is one of three guys that owns the major portion of, or has claimed, the mining rights, mineral rights to the moon. And what he did with this group was went to the United Nations. And, of course, countries are not allowed to claim any part of the moon. But these individuals, being not countries, were allowed. And if you go to thelivingmoon.com, you'll see all the paperwork that we have there on the claims that these guys made for the minerals on the moon.
So he's a former NASA scientist and a current consultant to NASA?
Apparently. What the interesting part was that he used to work with reptilian in his laboratory. And he told us that the eyes were very strange. He wore dark glasses, and that when he took the glasses off, he could tell he was a reptilian because of the inner eyelid that would open and close every once in a while.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, I don't know. I'm trying to get some research. I'm trying to research him right now as we speak. But what is he a doctor of? Astrophysics or what?
I don't know. It's probably on the Living Moon.
Okay, I'll check it out. I'm looking at it. Then that's, let's see, R-E-S-N-I-C-K, not R-E-Z-N-I-K, R-E-S-N-I-C-K.
Right.
And so the Mars mineral rights have been secured by the good doctor, Lieutenant Colonel Timothy R. O'Neill and Guy Kramer.
Now, I can't understand how that can be because, there's pretty bad guys up there on Mars. As a matter of fact, that's where the Bigfoot comes from. So I don't
know. The Bigfoot comes from Mars?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were originally from Mars. And so I don't know how all this fits in, but, you know, the rabbit hole gets deeper and deeper.
Well, it certainly does. Well, we're about out of time here. Our planetudinium is turning into depletium. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What would you like to leave our listeners with?
Live your life with... We've unloaded a lot on you tonight, but you have to remember that the key to our life is living it with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, and with expressing your love to your family each and every day. And this is not a love you, honey, as you're flying out the door. This is taking them in your arms, your children, your wife, your loved ones, and telling them how much you love them. Now, if you graduate from Earth and you don't have to come back here, you're going to go out into space and see wonderful things, fantastic things. And we're just in a maturing place down here where our souls are being matured. And once you're born and you have a soul, you live forever and ever and ever. There's no end. Like there's no end to this universe. There is no 17 billion years or any of that Hubble stuff that they tell you about. The universe is infinite. It goes on forever. There's so many billions of different types of aliens and so many different dimensions. There's not one, two, three, or four dimensions. There's 20 of them. And once we get off Earth, once we graduate here, we get to see a lot of that stuff.
That's great. John Lear, it was a real pleasure talking to you. Come back again sometime soon, will you? I'll see you out there in Nevada one of these days.
Okay.
Take care. Well, everybody, I have one last announcement to make. It's April Fool's Day, and this entire program has been an aural hologram, so to speak, or an illusion. Or was it just an illusion of an illusion? Meet me at the usual undisclosable location next Saturday night, okay? Until then and beyond, good night.